Blog Talk Radio.
Today's show is a memorial for Leonard Nimoy, who died this week. And let's see what we have. A guest, Chris Eilenstein. Hello, Chris.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Okay. Were you a fan of Leonard Nimoy?
Oh, definitely.
Like, can anybody hear me?
Ed is here. Ed Young.
What, John, you always forget. There's people that haven't listened to the show before. Let's introduce Mr. Eilenstein.
Let's let
Chris introduce himself by his own decision.
No, John does it quite well. Yes, I'm the writer and director of The Soulless, which features both you and Ed.
As well as me.
There's Michael and Michael. Yep. And definitely, I've been a fan since I've been to watch Star Trek in reruns. I was about 6 years old when I saw my first episode.
Let's allow everybody to introduce themselves, and then we'll go on with the conversation. I'm Edward X. Young, and I'm a grindhouse actor, makeup artist, director, veteran of over 65 pictures. We have Mr. Michael Chartier. Introduce yourself, Mike.
My name is Michael Chartier. I'm a film actor. Recent association is with both Chris Allenstein and with Ed Young and the motion picture called Solace. Which,
we also have our producer, Cameron Scott, who is the writer, producer, director of Postmortem America 2021, featuring me and John Link and Linnea Quigley, a zombie western. Right, Cameron?
Yes, it is. I'm here with you running the switchboard as usual.
I am in a hospital right now, and when the doctors come out to talk to me about my father's condition, I may have to hang up, and I'll try to call back in afterwards.
Yeah, it's very sorry to hear about that, Ed.
My father had a major stroke, and he's undergone neurosurgery. I'm waiting for the doctor to come out and talk to me. I've been here for the past. I've been here since 7 this morning, and now it's 11 at night. So I've been here for the past.
Wow.
16-17 hours I've been here in the hospital. Do we have anybody else on with us that needs to be introduced before we begin our discussion?
I think that's everybody.
Yeah. And we're all Trekkies, and we're all old enough to remember when Star Trek began.
Yeah.
At the risk of me disappearing, I'd like Chris to talk, and everybody will talk in order, but I will say that I must admit, Leonard Nimoy, who played Mr. Spock on Star Trek, and many other things that you guys will discuss, while he was in the hospital 4 days before his death, on February 23rd, 2015, he sent forth his final tweet, rather beautiful and poetic. His tweet on Twitter was, "A life is like a garden. Perfect moments can be had, but not preserved. Except in memory, live long and prosper."
Mm-hmm. That sums it up pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly went out elegantly and in great style.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how he did about everything in his life. So,
yeah,
which is very rare in the Hollywood world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard people have met him at conventions and such. I've heard that he was, unlike some people. I've heard other television celebrities who may or may not be mentioned. I heard that Leonard Nimoy was always a gentleman and always extremely great, gracious to his fans and very giving.
There was even a time in his career where he resented the typecasting and was Spock, but he still always respected the fans and never let that kind of frustration out.
That's what I think is
said. Love the show.
I'm going to take a back seat in a moment because I have to hang up, and you guys are all here. But that's what I think. That's what I think is most amusing. Leonard Nimoy wrote an autobiography years after Star Trek had been canceled, before the movies began, and the title of his autobiography was "I Am Not Spock," but in fact he was Spock. I think one of the reasons why Spock was so real is that Leonard Nimoy truly embodied him. And lived a life and conducted himself with the intelligence and eloquence of Mr.
Right.
Spock.
Well, he also created so many aspects of the character that that we kind of take for granted now. He developed himself, which is very unusual for an actor to contribute creatively so much to a character, but he did.
Nobody could play a Vulcan like him.
Nope. He set the bar and what the template for it.
I know it seemed apparently from his autobiography, it seemed that he did, as many actors do, resented the typecasting, but then he came to embrace it, much in the way Adam West tried to flee Batman, but now in his 80s he embraces Batman. It's interesting. I never met Leonard Nimoy, but I did meet DeForest Kelly back in the 80s. And DeForest Kelly told me so many actors complained about typecasting, but I love it. I love it. He said, because I'm lazy. I think I'm a pretty good actor, but I'm quite lazy. It's great to be given a character that I can play for the rest of my life. I don't have to work at developing a new character. And he said, and, you know, I don't have to work that often. He goes, every few years they call me back to make one of these movies and they make a bundle of money. He goes, I just love the typecasting. I love being Dr. McCoy. I don't care if for the rest of my life the only time I ever act is when I'm playing Dr. McCoy. And I think that's the way he did carry it on till the bitter end. Mm-hmm. I think Leonard Nimoy came to that manner of thinking in the end. But, you know, naturally he was a very versatile, talented guy in many ways, and I think he tried to flee the character. But how can you flee the character when the character
is
you?
It's also a two-edged catch-22 for you, because actors that work are lucky, but whenever you play a character like a Mr. Spock, you're bound to be typecast because it's so unique. But also when Star Trek was canceled, there were years, 3-4 years after, where they received actually no income from other jobs or from Star Trek. So it was a lean period for all of them right afterwards. So you could see where they resented Paramount making tons of money on Star Trek and them not. So it was a really mixed series of emotions going on for them for years after the show was canceled.
Hey, Ed?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Did you know that DeForest Kelly first worked with Nimoy in the Virginian?
I didn't know that.
So it was many years before Star Trek that they had gotten together.
Yep.
And then
Shatner and Nimoy
first worked together in an episode of Man from U.N.C.L.E., where Nimoy played a villain from the Iron Curtain, and Shatner was a U.N.C.L.E. recruit.
I didn't know
they had worked together before Star Trek.
I did know that they are almost exactly the same age. There were erroneous accounts that they were both born on precisely the same day, but actually they were born 4 days apart in 1951. They were virtually the same age.
Huh. Yeah, Nimoy always goes, just remember, Shatner's older than me. He always wanted to point that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by 4 days.
By 4 days, yes. But he always thought he looked much older than Shatner, so he was always saying, no, remember, he's the older one.
And it might be common knowledge, but I think you guys all know that, you know, I mean, Nimoy was born to an Orthodox Jewish family from Boston in a Yiddish-speaking household. I mean, English was essentially a second language for him. I mean, his parents, who were Jewish and spoke only Yiddish, fled the persecution going on in Europe at the time. And the famous greeting that he had, where he would separate his fingers, was actually a gesture that he watched Orthodox rabbis make for a blessing.
Right. Yep.
I guess
and,
you guys...
Braided that into his own character. Yeah, you know, I was always thinking today how different Star Trek or just everyday cultural life would be right now if Martin Landau had taken the role of Spock originally and not Nimoy. Landau turned it down to do Mission Impossible because he said, you know, playing a character without emotions is not why I got into acting. And I'm just kind of thinking, wow, the world would be very different now if he'd said yes to the role. And
ironically, Chris,
you know, it's like Lugosi turning down the role of the Frankenstein monster.
Yep, yep. The world is forever changed because of somebody turning down a role, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then ironically, Chris, Nimoy went on to do Mission Impossible later on.
Well, and he took over Martin Landau's role in that, too, when Landau left that. So, it's fascinating.
Lee Marvin was actually originally cast as Quint in Jaws and turned it down because he thought the role was stupid and the movie was going to be stupid.
Yep, yep.
He said, I'm a deep sea fisherman. He said, I don't want my fishing buddies to be making fun of me for being in a movie where I'm fighting a rubber shark. I'm dropping out of this thing.
Yeah. A lot of them thought they were doing that while they were making Jaws, but, you know, things change later. You know, and there were... there were times when early in Star Trek where they just didn't know quite what they were doing. They just kind of believed in Gene Roddenberry's, vision at the time that would see them through when they were felt like they were doing a lot of foolish things, you know. They were breaking new ground. Now we take it for granted, but back then it was very daring and very original and a new way of thinking.
I was 6 years old when the series premiered, and of course, we all loved it. And it was back in those days when a few things on TV were in color. I mean, I didn't even own a color TV. I'd see it at the kid next door's house if I was lucky enough to be over there when it was on and see it in color. And we all loved it. And you know, at six, it was a little bit sophisticated. But by the time it got canceled, 2 years later, when I was like 8 or 9, I was so disappointed because I was really starting to appreciate it more. Then it was over.
Right.
11 years later, it came back with the enormous epic film series.
It really shows how a really good idea plants its seeds in the conscious mind of people and sticks around even when the show is canceled. All those great ideas and philosophies and outlook on life, the seed had been planted, you know, and it's just grown so much from there. It's really amazing to have watched this happen throughout my life, you know, especially once it hit syndication.
Star Trek TOS, what was it, 2 seasons? 3 seasons?
Which one?
What?
Which the original show?
The original series.
The original show was 3 years.
3 years.
They did a year and a half of the animated series a few years later, which was also quite good.
It's astounding that the money men of Hollywood, and we ranked on Hollywood last week with the meaninglessness of the Oscars, that the money men of Hollywood couldn't see the brilliance and the beauty of that series and canceled it after 3 seasons.
Well,
I mean,
you know, it's always ratings, but the thing is, I do remember reading that about 3 years after it went into syndication, NBC had a nightmare because they had owned what became one of the most popular shows of all time, and let it get out of their hands, you know.
If they had prolonged a few more years, it might have gotten much more popular. You see, like, for instance, All in the Family, that was the first 3 years nobody knew was on.
Sure.
But the idea started to become
cultural in that show as well.
Yeah.
And people
Married
started
with Children,
into it.
Classic comedy, funniest sitcom ever. That, it only got popular, like, after that stupid woman tried to get it taken off, and it actually got it more viewers, but
sure,
nobody knew it was on, and it lasted 11 seasons.
And continued it later in another show, I believe, yeah. But
which character?
Archie Bunker. Afterwards.
I was just talking about wait a minute.
All in the
Married
Family, and then
Children,
he continued the character
about
another few years later.
Yeah, first
long
I was talking
run
about All in the Family, and then Married with Children, which was the funniest sitcom ever, Married with Children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It lasted
11
seasons.
When you challenge people, like Star Trek did, you know, you're going to leave an impression.
If it had gone a few more, let it go a few more years, it might have lasted, who knows, 11 seasons. Because the first 3 seasons show, nobody knows it's on.
Well, Leonard Nimoy has said that if the show had gone one more year and it actually continued after the first landing on the moon, that he thought it would still have been on the air, you know?
Yeah.
He thought if it had just stayed on one more season, it would have really caught on. And I think in a lot of ways he was right, because syndication proved that once it hit that.
Yeah.
I remember watching it like at 11 o'clock on Channel 11 in like 1970. It must have just started syndication, but it was The Lights of Zetar was the episode. And I remember turning the TV on, and this woman turned bright green, is making this gargling sound. And I'm like, what the heck is this? And it scared the bejeebies out of me. And but I watched the next day, and I've been watching ever since. So, you know, even though the first, very first thing I ever remember watching in Star Trek scared the heck out of me, there was something about it that made me want to come back.
Yeah, I saw one of the first run.
I'm sure you know this, that Roddenberry's inspiration for Star Trek was Wagon Train. And ironically, Leonard Nimoy was in four episodes of Wagon Train.
Well, it was funny the other day, MeTV, the local classic TV station, had the day Leonard Nimoy died, they were showing some episodes. They showed an episode of Rawhide, and he was playing a Native American terrorizing Clint Eastwood, who was tied up the entire episode. And I was saying, oh, Leonard Nimoy and Clint Eastwood in the same episode. I had no idea. But there they are.
Yeah, you know, Gene Roddenberry got the idea for Spock from Zombies of the Stratosphere, in which Nimoy played an alien.
That was his
and
first
he said,
alien
I'm gonna,
role,
I'm
yeah.
going to get that actor and put pointed ears on him.
Well, he actually wanted Martin Landau for Spock. And Landau was not interested as soon as he heard of what the character was, which I think Nimoy struggled with too, being an actor and playing a character without emotions. And then I started to understand that that's not really what Spock is. Spock is a character with emotions who does not want to show them and who wants
to express them. For an actor who wanted to emulate Marlon Brando when he was young.
Right. You know, that's opposite to probably every bit of acting training they had at that point. But Nimoy made it an own and found depth to it that I think was not there probably originally on in the concept of the character.
Yeah.
And that's where his contribution really lies, I think, in just making that character almost more human than a lot of the humans around him. He was a nice mirror for humanity. And what we want to be someday.
Yeah.
You know, John,
that's
John,
the power of it.
Yeah.
John, you mentioned Zombies of the Stratosphere, which was, you know, a serialized movie back in the 50s.
Yeah.
But some of your listeners may not realize he also played some small parts in some horror sci-fi films in the 50s. One of them was...
The Fiend Without a Face? Was he in that one?
Yeah, one was Them, in which he played an Army Sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also played a professor in The Brain Eaters.
Brain Eaters, that's it. I was thinking Fiend Without a Face, but no, it was Brain Eaters.
His first movie was Kid Monk Baroni. He played a fighter. I don't think I've ever seen
that. And actually, that's what he thought was going to be his big success.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a skinny guy for playing a boxer, huh?
Yeah.
And he was also in a Twilight Zone episode called The Quality of Mercy.
That was a good episode. Good episode.
Let's see, which one was that?
I remember his Outer Limits were not the best ones, but he stood out in them. And it was like 30, 40 years later, he was in an episode called iRobot of the Outer Limits. And then when the series was revived, he starred in the remake that his son directed. His son, Adam Nimoy, directed the new version of iRobot. So a multi-generational family there. The film directing.
Tonight, now that we're talking about the passing of Leonard Nimoy, we might as well also talk about the passing of Harve Bennett.
Yeah, that was that happened today. Harve Bennett was the first guy I think really rebooted Star Trek when he did Star Trek II.
Oh.
Paramount brought him in to produce Star Trek II, and he watched the first movie and kind of said, I've got to save a beached whale here, you know. He didn't know where to go after Star Trek Motion Picture. And, he did a great job with the series after that.
And Harv was really responsible for The Wrath of Khan.
Yep. Mm. Yep. He developed the story and brought the creative crew in and brought Nick Meyer in because he was a big fan of Time After Time. And, of course, Nicholas Meyer rewrote the script and helped reboot the series also.
Mm-hmm.
And he passed away earlier today.
Yeah. Today, huh? Wow.
Yeah. Not a good week for Star Trek fans, but...
No. You know who else kicked the bucket? Daniel Van Bogen. You remember him from that Malcolm in the Middle?
Yes.
He played army officer, I believe, who was
I remember him from all sorts of things.
Parts.
He's just a great character actor. You recognize the face, you know?
Yeah. Unfortunately, with him, life imitated art. He lost his leg to diabetes. And then when they wanted to whittle away at the other leg, take off his toes, he shot himself in the head. And I believe he blinded himself, destroyed his optic nerves. And he must have been, that was like 6 years ago, he must have been just laying in bed blind, no leg for these last 6 years.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea that happened to him. That's horrible.
Yeah.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
Ed's back.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I meant to get in before the show reached after party. Of course, we should continue talking about Star Trek. I don't know what you guys talked about in the 10 minutes I was gone talking to the doctor.
Well, we were just talking a little bit about Harv Bennett also, who passed away today, who produced Star Trek 2, 3, 4, and 5.
It
really helped reboot the series.
I am outraged at the news reports about Shatner not bothering to come to Leonard Nimoy's funeral.
Yeah,
that's not true. He actually
go,
tried
right?
and had an event.
I read later,
get away
later
from.
He did go.
Yes, he got there as soon as he could, and you know, it was short notice. He passed away Friday, and the funeral was Sunday morning.
Mm.
So. And he was all the way across the country doing charity events. So it was tough. You know, that's tough. And but he did make it for most of the, the day after the actual burial. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just kind of find it distressing and a little bit depressing that people put Shatner down for that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, think of it logistically from our point of view. It would just be very tough, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But, you know, it made for some headlines on the New York Post and whatever.
Yeah, wow.
Anything to sell papers.
Yeah.
But,
Sorry about that, fellas.
One thing I have thought about since Friday that I had no idea that his death was going to hit me quite as hard as it did is it does make you feel more, mortal when you see your childhood heroes pass away because, it must be like a baseball fan when Babe Ruth died. You know, you just kind of feel like that can't be right. You know, they're kind of immortal in your mind.
Yeah.
And yet you realize they're mortal in the real world. That gives you a real sense of, not taking anything for granted anymore. I really started to look back at the things that were my favorite parts of the series, and they were always those moments where Spock would kind of break his facade and show his human side. Like when he realized Kirk, he hadn't killed Kirk in a muck time. He just yells out, Jim, and spins him around with a huge smile on his face. And everybody's basically laughing at him, and then he puts on his, straightens his posture and fixes his uniform and goes, I'm very glad you're alive, sir. You know, those are just things that I just believe he probably brought to that character.
Yeah.
Or that the writers saw they could do. And those are some of the best moments, I think, in TV.
Yeah.
Are those moments.
He used a lot of what he had put together for the character of Spock in the episode of the film series that he directed, which was The Voyage Home.
Right, which I still think is the best film
Which is probably the best regular Star Trek film that came out. Definitely Wrath of Khan was in there, but you know, definitely on a par with Wrath of Khan, I think.
Oh yeah. There's another, you know, one of the best moments in that is where Spock is trying to learn how to swear, and of course he can't do it till the very end, when, you know, Kirk goes, "Where's my power?" and Spock goes, "One damn minute, Admiral," you know, and he finally gets it right. And those are just the things that you know, I remember best about the character. Even though he's superior intellectually, emotionally, his race has kind of gone beyond humanity in a lot of ways. He still learns to see merit in those things that make us human beings. And that's why Star Trek works so well, is it just makes you proud to be human. And, you know, there's not enough of that in the news nowadays or on the internet, things that really make you feel like there's hope for us. And I'd like to think there is.
And the unfortunate thing is I think there was a new film planned with the new the Star Trek franchise that
right.
was supposed to star both Nimoy and Shatner.
It was going to have a scene with the two of them together, yes. But, I believe that script had been abandoned a couple months ago and a new one was being written. I don't know what is involved with that one yet. That Simon Pegg is co-writing. But I'm sure he would be one of those who would want to do that kind of scene. Because he's a big fan. Simon Pegg, who's been playing Scotty in the two films and wrote Shaun of the Dead and a number of other films recently, is co-writing Star Trek III, a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what they do.
And let us not...
Sorry?
Dead? What happened?
Oh, lost somebody there.
Ed, where are you?
I would suspect
the new Star Trek
film is going to have some sort of acknowledgement of Nimoy's passing or some sort of a tribute to Spock in it. As far as the story.
I don't know whether you guys knew this, but Nimoy also did quite a bit on Broadway.
Yeah, I was reading his credits, yeah.
Yeah, he actually did Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof, the musical. He did the lead in The Man in the Glass Booth, and he played Randall McMurphy in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right.
And he played the psychiatrist in Equus, which I had actually seen him in.
Oh, you saw him in that?
Yes.
The show I have always wanted to see, I know there's a videotape version of this, is the show Vincent, where he played Vincent Van Gogh's brother,
yes.
Theodore. Mm. And I've heard that is a wonderful show. And the woman called Golda, that Ingrid Bergman's last work.
Ingrid Bergman did.
That he co-starred, is also wonderful. I remember that. Harve Bennett produced that as well. That was one of his TV productions.
And let's not forget the remake of The Invasion of the Body Snatchers with
Donald Sutherland and
right.
Jeff Goldblum.
Right.
Yeah. That was very good. I do remember thinking that was interesting because Nimoy's playing an alien duplicate in that who has no emotions but is pretending to have them. So it's kind of the complete reverse of Spock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was ingenious casting on the part of Phil Kaufman for giving Nimoy that part. And right after, I remember being very excited by that because I thought it was very good, but right afterwards it was announced that Phil Kaufman was going to direct the first Star Trek movie. And that didn't end up happening. But I remember thinking that was a good, that would have been a neat combination of him. He was also the original director for Raiders of the Lost Ark, and of course we know that didn't end up happening either.
Mm.
That was a good remake.
Yeah.
So does anybody have a personal favorite episode?
Yeah, I do. The two part of the Menagerie. That was always
right.
My favorite Star Trek.
That great one.
Yeah.
And that was ingenious because they filled an episode with a pilot episode.
Yeah.
The original pilot when they didn't expect to ever broadcast that. And Gene Roddenberry came up with a way to basically fill an episode with that pilot, but fit it into a storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very, very good Star Trek story.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorites is The Devil in the Dark, where Spock mind melds with the Horta.
Oh, yeah,
And finds out that this monstrous thing is just a mom protecting its babies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you see episodes like that, that's when you realize that Star Trek's got something above other science fiction of the time, like the Lost in Space and so forth, because in Lost in Space, the Horta would have been a monster, and Mr. Smith would have screamed and run away, and they would have zapped it and flown off. In Star Trek, no, the Horta is not the monster. It's the miners destroying the eggs that are the ones doing the harm.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's the difference between Star Trek and the other shows, and that's why it's still around.
Yeah.
For those kind of ideas.
I'm still partial to The Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah. And The Muck Time is probably the best Spock episode ever done.
Mm-hmm.
You can run a list of great episodes.
And also it was funny, after the original TV series went off the air, you kind of wanted more Star Trek when you heard Nimoy's voice associated with In Search Of.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And the animated show that they did, which had a number of excellent stories. But, of course, it was low-budget Saturday morning animation. But they did bring some nice aspects to the character in that series as well. But, he was a perfect host for In Search Of. I remember being riveted by that show and believing everything he said.
And that was a David Walper production, right?
I don't remember much about it other than being a young, preteen watching Leonard Nimoy talk about the Loch Ness Monster, and I'm going, wow, I had no idea there was such a thing. You know, it was, and because it's Leonard Nimoy, I go, I believe it. It's got to be there. Of course, you watch it now with a little more grain of salt, and you realize that he was never saying that it actually exists. It just, but it did have a sense of wonder to it because of his involvement. But that was a very, very memorable show for that reason.
Yeah.
Not so much what it said, but for how